Previously on Quest Laid Plans.
She's gone, Porla!
I've never really understood why everybody keeps saying that.
Because it's true!
It's true if you believe it's true, but what if you don't believe it's true?
I mean, that's delusional.
It stops you from seeing what you have right in front of you.
I've been studying necromancy, and before you say anything, it's a beautiful school of magic. Not a lot of people know this. It's very, very logical, and it's flexible in a way that no other school of magic is, which is good because you all keep fucking my shit.
Your grief has made you so cruel. Porla, Chiron would not even recognize you. If you bring her back, she would not see an ounce of who she knew.
And then I would like to use the disguise self spell to transform myself into Chiron. You made all the wrong choices.
How could you? You don't deserve to even look like her for a second.
Can I try to hug her?
She starts to hug you back. You feel her arms kind of creep around your shoulders, and you feel her kind of just shaking with these heavy sobs.
Help us make this okay.
I told you, there's nothing I can do anymore. It doesn't matter if I want to stop it or not. And you see her throw her arms out and rise to the sky, and her aura has wings. And you see her whiz over to the temple, just like shoot over. She lands kind of in the temple over the bowl and then just sort of drops into the bowl. And everything goes still. Welcome to Quest Laid Plans, the podcast that asks the question, can an old party learn new tricks? I'm your Dungeon Master, Megan Kelleher, and with me are five people who get to come make your life over, but not the Fab Five, because we didn't have the budget to get Queer Eye.
I'm Maya Esming. I play Windswept Palm, Air Genasi Gnome Fighter, and I'm here to make over your jewelry collection.
<Wow.
laughs> And only that.
A very specific stylist.
I'm Phil Revolo, playing Kit Marpolo, Water Genasi Monk. And Kit definitely took a required conflict resolution training one time and now can totally repair your relationship with your dad. Just saying that for you, Esther.
Hello, I'm Jesse B. Kohler, playing a human boy, golden boy. And actually, I'm going to need you all to come take care of me. It's a twist episode. Esther Miffian, sorcerer.
I'm Jamie Hathaway, someone who quoted Antony from Queer Eye in the epigraph of my undergrad dissertation. Aveline Yavri Skywatcher, who is the Bobby of the group in that she can and will burn down your house in order for it to be rebuilt better.
And has a lot That's of true. Conflict about religion.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I'm non-binary and I'm growing my hair out, so I guess I'm the JVN of this establishment, Nadamari Vocheva, playing your halfling wizard rogue, Naraya Winsworn. Can you believe?
Listen up, fives. A ten is speaking and we're going to get going. We obviously left off at kind of a critical point. And we will get back into it. But the first thing I want to do today is I want to take us into the past. And I want everybody to think about, you saw Jesse as Esther disguise self as Chiron. And I think seeing Chiron for the first time is really obviously traumatic and jarring for Porla, but it's also kind of jarring for the rest of you. And what I want to do is hear from each of you a memory that you have about Chiron, and maybe depending on what we feel, we could do like a little mini scene around that. I'm going to just roll and see who we're going to start with.
Oh, fuck.
Aveline.
Okay. I think Aveline has a memory of Does the Adventuring Campus Guild have, like, the equivalent of a quad or something?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely, yes. I think we've already established that. And also, for the purposes of this, like, anything you want to be true is true. Like, short of, there were also, like, two of me, and I had a clone. You know, don't be, like, bitchy about it, but...
So Aveline and Aveline's clone were hanging out on the quad. my identical twin sister, who was murdered under mysterious circumstances, gets a javelin thrown through her neck, and Chiron was right there. Campaign 2, avenge Aveline's dead twin sister.
You just remembered her right now in this flashback.
Oh yeah, buried memories.
Unlocked traumatic memory. I think seeing Chiron, seeing Esther as Chiron, Aveline, like, and we're in this kind of like weird outdoor space with this like kind of temple thing and this big bowl, and I think it maybe looks a bit like the quad with some like columns on some building, and I think Aveline remembers like just sitting around like drinking a fantasy frappuccino with Chiron and having Addy, like, because this is before she settled on a form, so I'm imagining her as like a little on fire bunny rabbit, like just kind of hopping around. We're just drinking a coffee and like playing, and I can imagine the sun shining on Chiron's face and Aveline maybe having that moment of being like, oh fuck, and kind of realizing that she has some not quite platonic feelings towards her friend.
Oh man.
Seeing her again brings back this like, oh fuck, yeah, she was always so beautiful.
Yeah, you remember the way that the sun hit Chiron's blonde hair that day, and you remember looking over and you remember Chiron saying, you were right, Aveline, fantasy frappuccino really does make the best frappuccinos.
So much, like, I know we have to walk off campus to get it. It's just, it's worth it. It's worth the extra 10 minutes to get the, you know, the little sprinkles that have,
yeah, you get the cardio flavors. In you get, yeah, the sprinkles, huge brain, and then she kind of toasts to you. So what did you want to talk about?
I don't know what Aveline was planning on talking to Chiron about, but I think after she's had this moment of like, oh fuck, like seeing the sun on her hair and stuff, and then Chiron being like, so what did you want to talk about? I think I just go off onto some like weird semi-intense like religious tangent. Because like,
it's so hot.
Teenage Aveline is still very like, has been raised in kind of a quite dogmatic way around the god of admonition, and I think it's just like, yep, don't know what I'm gonna do with these feelings, we're gonna push them down, and I'm gonna talk about the big horned horse that I worship, that I have a very normal and non-complicated relationship with that will definitely not change at any point in the next decade. And I think Chiron is probably really nice about it.
I just, like, it's really nice to have someone to talk about this stuff with, I guess, because I don't know, like, I kind of question stuff too. I mean, like, I know I'm a paladin, but I'm not always sure I'm doing the best with the whole, like, connecting to the gods thing. You know, Porla seems so confident with it, and even you seem to have such a strong connection with it. It's just, I don't know. I appreciate hearing you talk about it. It makes me feel better. I worry that I'm, I don't know, like, not doing a good job.
I think you're a great paladin. You know, you save our asses way more than I do.
But that's not true. It's a team effort. Just because I'm, like, the leader or whatever. I mean, I gotta have people to lead, and they can't suck, so...
Yeah, but we would definitely suck more without you.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me, Aveline. Am I blushing?
Aveline blushes deeply.
Naraya, share a memory that comes to mind with Chiron.
God, okay, so, I don't know why it was me, but right before, it was like shortly before that big battle that we don't talk about, I ended up being her roommate at like an inn or something, and I don't remember how that ended up happening, because you would think Porla or Aveline or someone else would be rooming with her. They weren't. I don't know why. It was her first time rooming with each other, I think, and
I didn't know before that she spent half an hour every night just shining her armor. And I know that sounds... I know how it sounds, okay? I watched her go through this very meticulous ritual of, like, you know, taking the breastplate off and taking the shoulder pieces off and, like, the gauntlets and all of it. And just, like... And it was... I don't think I should have been there. It felt very intimate. And back then I was in, you know, I don't wear armor. So I was trying to crack a joke about it. And I told her that I was very jealous that she was so much safer than some of us. Because she wears a lot of armor.
Yeah, well, some of us need it.
Well,
sorry, I didn't mean it like, you know, sorry. I just... You're lucky you don't have to wear it. It's heavy.
Yeah, but like you know you can get hit so much more, and it's so much harder for you to be... Oh yeah, also it looks nice and fancy, and I kind of gesture to my like very worn leathers that I'm wearing.
Hey, that's an aesthetic, but thank you.
I mean,
you.
Yeah, it is an aesthetic, and I would not... Honestly, if I got to wear armor, it would not look like anything like what you're wearing, but, I mean, it's cool. Like, you walk into, you know, you walk into the inn, and people know you're a hero. Like, it's, and I guess, like, bonus, it keeps you safe.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure, huh?
Well, you know, you didn't... Did you choose a paladin life? I was gonna say you didn't choose a paladin life, but I don't... No.
I mean, yeah, I did. I don't know if I chose the hero life, but I mean,
well,
here we are, right?
Well, it sort of comes with the, you know, shiny white armor. It's kind of, it's what people in shiny white armor do, you know?
Yeah. Well, as long as I'm protected, I hope you know that nothing's going to happen to you guys.
That's a terrifying thing to say to someone who's weeks away from fighting a thing with you. I mean,
I'm so sorry.
It.
I didn't mean to scare you. You're definitely going to die.
Good. See, this is the kind of honesty I expect from a leader.
See you in hell, bitch.
I love her.
So anyway, Esther.
Okay. So I think Esther was able to transform into Chiron because Esther, in a way, was the most distant from Chiron. I think out of a place of a bit of fear and intimidation and unsure and just like unable to process those emotions in any way, was very rarely trying to get into conversations with Chiron, and just sort of saw them as this older sister figure, this like leader that they would just like only have conversations with at a bare necessity for fear of like looking like an idiot or enabled in any way. But I think that Chiron sort of noticed this and saw this, like, you know, teen angsty boy web that Esther was existing in. And the two of them started going to this rope course that was on campus for, like, evening workouts. And it was just, like, it was, like, an obstacle course. And, like, there were, like, parts of the course, like, it was a track on, like, the upper level. But then you literally had to, like, climb a rope to get down to the bottom level. And it was this, you know, jumping over a log. And then you have to rack up a certain, like, weight intensity when you were, like, punching a dummy. And Chiron, like, insisted that Esther did this fully without magic, just kind of like wearing down his anxieties. And then I think through that they started to have these conversations that necessarily were never serious, but were like just goofy, just dicking around. And that was something that Esther was like at the time, and maybe still even now, really unable to like get to a place of just, I'm just talking, I'm not trying to put anything up, I'm just talking about whatever.
Awesome. So you guys are just finishing up this insane like ropes obstacle course, like the thing in The Witcher meets the thing in Hercules, and it's just like things coming at you left and right. You are exhausted, you're bloody, you're sweaty, you're winded, and Chiron is like infuriatingly pretty much fine, just like maybe a light sweat, but for the most part just like, oh yeah,
pretty,
that was a good one.
Pretty equal that time. We did. Pretty
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Job.
Vivian, hold on. Let's sit down. Sit down. And she
I'll,
takes
I'll
you
I'll sit
to
down if you need to sit down.
Yeah, I need to sit down. Come
okay.
on. And you guys sit down on a log that's kind of overlooking this beautiful, peaceful pond. And you kind of just like take a second and you kind of feel like Chiron's maybe letting you catch your breath. After a minute, Chiron's like, what are you into, Miphians? Like, what are you into?
What? What do you mean?
You're like a teenage boy.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, this is weird. My little brother is like kind of close in age to you and his birthday is coming up and I just like, I have no fucking idea what to send him.
Oh.
What is cool? What is cool for youths now?
I don't know, maybe some weights? Or...
He's more of a music guy. What kind of music do you like?
Oh, I don't really listen to music. I've always just thought that it was kind of a distraction.
I really like music, but I don't know. You just kind of have to be where it's happening, which sucks. But my brother kind of showed me. He's kind of dorky, and he collects these old like disc things that. They come in all these weird sizes and there's machines you put them in and they play music without, or they play like a recording of music or something. And I guess that's, you know, how people used to listen to music. And
yeah.
he really likes this artist, Lil Nas the 10th. And I don't know, do you know anything about this? Because this is yes. were there, do I have to listen to the first nine?
I imagine that the first nine have been lost, that only the 10th survived. But, you know, I just had this, like, memory of my mom is, like, really into, like, antiques. And this one time I had, like, come downstairs and I, like, found her listening on, like, this something that she called, like, a CD, I think.
That's it. I think that's what it is. It's
okay,
like
yeah.
little silver plates, right? But they have a hole in the middle, so
right.
it's like they look
yeah.
broken, but it's supposed to be there for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So she was listening to this this thing. She said it was this guy called like Sondheim or something. And I don't know. I like was really this is pretty fucking lame, but I was like pretty into that. I thought how the like sounds blended together.
Of course he's a secret theater kid. Of course he is. God.
Was, I don't know. It was really, it was kind of amazing how it all like mixed together and, you know, there was like a story that was being told as it was happening. It was kind of like us, right? Like how we like, you know, mixed together and it can sound really cool. So I don't, maybe look for, your brother might be into that Sondheim guy.
Sondheim. Okay. I'll remember that. Thank you. Let's head on back. And, Miphians, you got some metaphors in you. Who would have thought?
He's concerned.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it contagious?
I've heard that before. Yeah.
Hey everyone, it's me, Megan, and I have a few questions for you. My first question is, do you want to hang out with me and also the cast and also the amazing fan base, Questies, friends that have amassed? Don't you want to be part of that? If so, go to bit.ly/QuestLaidDiscord or QuestLaidPlans.com/Discord and join our Discord server because we are having a blast there and we don't want you to have FOMO about it. Is FOMO still a thing people say? I don't know. I'm old. So the second question is, have you seen our Instagram? Because Netta has been doing these incredible graphics on there. It's QuestLaidPlans is our handle on Instagram. And Netta has been doing these incredible graphics for every episode. And our grid looks so cool. It's like witchcraft to me. And I am so impressed by it. And I want everybody else to see it too. So if you, like me, don't spend a lot of time on Instagram, I would go check it out anyway. If you spend a lot of time on Instagram, then, like, what are you doing? Definitely follow us. Third question, do you want more of your friends to listen? Do you want more strangers to listen? Of course you do. And so we would ask that you just sort of give us a little shout out on your social media platform or podcast review platform of choice. A lot of times there'll be threads like, can somebody recommend podcasts to me with, you know, non-cis white male DMs or cool AAPI characters, et cetera, et cetera. And if you ever see those, feel free to just be like, hey, check out Quest Late Plans, because we always love it. And also, my fourth and last question is, do you want to support us financially? I ask everyone I meet this, and usually the answer is no. But just in case it works this time, patreon.com/questlaidplans. Our most recent bonus episode was a talk back with the cast about the first half of the season, and it was super, super fun. And we also have a new bonus episode coming in the next week or so, I think. That should be another pitch a bitch. So we've got so much bonus content already, and you love to see it. So check us out there, patreon.com/questlaidplans. And all of our social media platforms and stuff are, as always, in the show notes of this episode and all episodes. I guess my last question is, would you like to hear the rest of the episode? Hope you do, because here it comes. Bye!
All right, Windswip.
Oh, come on. I'm still reeling from that. So so I was trying hard to think about this, and I think it's quite possible that Chiron is one of the only people who knew that at one point during the heroing career, Windswip did try to multi-class into wizard and failed because she didn't have the book learnings. I think she was probably secretly studying for like a test or something, trying to memorize, understand spells, really kind of particularly in the divination school, and was really trying to push herself in that direction. And she has, like, she sort of figured, you know, she's got a couple of these runes that she understands and is very close with and connects to that can kind of help her do some sort of magical stuff, but she wanted to make it, well, I mean, we can talk about it, but she, I think, didn't pass this exam or whatever. I know it's not like a school, but I imagine it's like some kind of like, if in order to learn wizard spells, you must be able to do this, you know, kind of thing. And yeah, she went in real nervous. She'd stayed up all night studying, went in first thing in the morning, did her best, but was so tired that she like forgot everything and really just bumbled through it. And I think this scene probably happened maybe the next day when she received the official notice that it wasn't going to work out. She would have tried to keep it to herself, but I think Chiron would have at least known about her endeavors and probably like checked up on her.
Yeah, I think you're maybe, I don't know, was this was when you guys were like hanging out more at the Adventuring Guild. Maybe you were in your room.
Yeah.
And the doors open and Chiron sort of knocks on the open door and is like, hey,
oh,
what?
Hey.
Oh.
Hi.
Hey, are you okay?
Yep.
Your big test is pretty soon, right?
Sorry,
I don't mean to stress you out. Do you need me to help you study?
What day is it? Today? I've lost track of time a little bit in all the...
It's Saturday.
Oh yeah. You know, I don't think I need to do it, actually. I don't think I need to try to go for it. It's And you see there's, like, when Chiron first came in, there was, like, a letter she had been reading that she had tried very unsuccessfully. She's, like, kind of sitting on it, like, I think, you know, the runes are strong enough. I'm strong enough. I can get all, you know, big in the field. And I think that's all anybody ever needs from me, is that. So, I think it's fine. It's gonna be okay. I changed my mind. It's too hard.
I mean, okay. Sure. I mean, you're great the way you are, but I don't know, why did you want to be a wizard?
Oh, you know, I think it just, I sort of figured that it was, I mean, I don't know, I think, because my mom was asking at one point if I would ever think about it, and, you know, she's so smart, she's such a great, you know, divination and all that, and
stop you right there, because my mom's a chef, and you've tasted my cooking, right?
I
can tell the face said it all. Don't need to say anything. It's okay.
It tastes real good.
Okay, we're gonna need to work on your lying before we go to the next town.
The amount of salt that you put into it is just wow. Like, talk about seasoning.
Right. So I think that my point is, you know, what do you want? Like, you're not your mom. You're you.
Well. And you can tell she's, like, never thought of that before. Like, literally ever.
You're what, like, 20? You're not supposed to know, I don't think.
Okay.
I didn't know what I wanted when I was 20. I don't think I'd really know now either. I mean, I want to defeat the Dreadnought, but, like, ideally that doesn't take the rest of my entire life, so who knows. But, yeah, I think you have time.
Okay. Well, that's... Okay. Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I'm not my mother, even though she's one of the main reasons why I went to Adventuring Guild in the first place, and, you know, she's always exploring, off exploring, and just doing the cool stuff, and I guess I'm happy here to help you guys fight this big awful thing that's coming. That's really important. But I guess I thought maybe if I had a little more of the like real magic in me that she and I could, I don't know, you know, have more to talk about. Because she doesn't fight the way that we do. She is, like, exploring ancient civilizations and figuring out what our whole world was like, figuring out how it all fits together, all those, like, the most important questions that we have about our existence and our world, and she's figuring that out, and I'm...
You're figuring out how we get to keep having a world. We go to explore, maybe we're not exploring, you know, whatever... holes in the ground. I truly have no idea what your mom does. We are going to, like, taverns and exploring what happened to the people there and how can we help and how can we make the world a better place in the future. I mean, I don't know your mom and I don't feel right saying weird stuff about other people's moms, but I think
smart.
She would be an idiot not to be proud of you. And if you think you don't have magic, I would like to point out that I'm usually 5'7", like, all the time. Like, I've never not been the height that I am, and so I would say there's probably something a little special about you.
Oh. I mean, it is pretty cool that when I'm big. Yeah, no, you're right. I just and she just very shyly slides the letter over to her, so that she can read that it's like, you did not pass the test. She's like, I just sort of thought I could do better. I thought more of myself. But I guess not.
I think Chiron lifts up the corner of the letter and, like, doesn't even really read it. Just sort of, like, pushes it away. And is like, man, like, fuck him. Who cares? We're gonna be out of here in a couple months. We've got important stuff to do. Nobody's gonna remember probably what kind of anything you were at all. They're just gonna remember you as Windswip, the hero who did great things.
Hmm.
And they'll remember me as Chiron the Sexy, who was so good-looking that it hurt to behold her.
Oh, my
I'm still working on it.
Oh, no, I think you've got something there. I think that's really good. I think you should get your brother to write a song about that.
Okay, I was thinking business cards, but you're right. I'm dying. Okay, Kit, you're up. Last but not least.
What I'm imagining is this is at some point on our travels, like close to when we were going to face the Dreadnought. And I think this is my last significant interaction I had with Chiron, because just in terms of like, it, we were not like close personally. And this is like the very last memory I have of her before everything happened. And we're like at this huge inland, like mountain lake. And it's like the end of the day, we've just traveled and Kit is just sitting at the edge of the lake. He has like a little rock in his hand that he's sort of palming and he's looking out and just thinking of home, which is like oceans away. You know, he's like from this island place and he just really misses. We've been on this long journey. All he can think about is home. And he's really feeling tired and homesick. And when Esther, as Chiron, hugs Porla, it just reminds him of this moment because it's a moment when Chiron came, like noticed him out here and helped comfort him about, you know, missing home.
Yeah, so I think you're sitting sort of on this like inland, what did you say, like a lake?
Yeah.
I think there's probably kind of like a pebbly shore. And yeah, you sort of hear footsteps behind you on the pebbles and you hear Chiron go, "Oh, cool rock. Do you think I could find one like that? It looks better than these ones down here. I really want a cool rock."
Want a cool rock? Sure. You know what? Yeah, let's go looking for one. You know, when I was back home, we used to try to, well, this is silly. You probably know how to do this because you're so good at everything, but I don't know. We used to like skip stones. You know, and I was just thinking about that. And here, you can have this rock I have. Maybe, I don't know. You know how to do that, right?
Yes, obviously. Yes. And Chiron takes it and just like throws it as hard as possible into the lake to the point where it almost like goes all the way across onto the other side, but doesn't quite. And with a large splash, you see Chiron kind of be like, "Yes."
Well, as it is about, like, I can tell immediately that this is not skipping, and it's going to hit the water.
Wow.
And before it like hits the water and sinks, I very quietly, using just like with my hands by my side, cast Shape Water. On the water underneath where the stone would sink to actually make it like skip.
Wow.
And like I try to do it so that like Chiron doesn't notice.
Oh my god, I'm gonna actually roll perception for Chiron. I didn't know I was gonna be rolling during these, but you know what? Chiron got a 3, so I don't know what the DC was, but I imagine it was harder than 3. So yeah, I think Chiron is like, "Yes," and then it starts giving cards like, "Yes, nailed it, got it in one." I'm gonna be honest with you, Kit, I'm from the ocean and it's kind of hard to skip rocks when the tide is sort of bringing them back to you. I've always thought it would look cool, like I saw it in books and stuff, but hey, you know, maybe some of your skills are rubbing off on me.
Yeah, well, you know what, here, let me try to, you know, I live near the ocean too, and I know it can be hard when the tide's coming in and stuff, but you can totally still do it. Here, let me show you. And I take a rock and I use Shape Water again, but this time in a way that's really obvious to like churn some water up to make it very like a surface that you wouldn't be able to skip the stone on.
Hard mode.
And I just try to skip the stone and show her that it's like possible to do.
I think you guys have like a really nice afternoon of just kind of stress release. I was doing like a wave pool, like on a cruise, but like it's just a lake in the middle of the forest, just skipping stones, and it's very like aggressive. And I think, you know, by the time the sun is setting, you end up just sort of sitting and watching the waves for a little while. And Chiron says, "Man, I didn't realize how much I was gonna miss seeing this."
Yeah, when you're from near the water, every time you see a big lake or something like this, it just really, it just makes you realize how small we all are in the great scheme of things, and somehow that's both terrifying and comforting, right?
I mean, speak for yourself, I'm 5'7".
Born this way.
No, you're right. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like with all these trees around, I'm just like, ugh, like kind of claustrophobic. You just want to see the sky you're used to seeing, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully it won't be too long before we can again.
Yeah. I'd like to see your sky, too. I mean, living near a volcano, that sounds pretty badass.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, maybe you can come over when we're all done with this.
Hell yeah. So you are all standing in this clearing that you've come through, this weird portal that Porla has created, and you've seen the likeness of your friend, or in the case of Esther, you've been the likeness of your friend and seen it reflected in their eyes. I think that you all have these memories come flooding back, and I want you all to take a point of inspiration, because you just, even though you know that it's not Chiron, you know it's Esther. Something about being in the same physical space on the precipice of what seems like a battle with Chiron there, you just feel a little stronger.
Dang. Thanks, Esther.
Jesus.
All right.
My heart.
So you've all taken this point of inspiration, and as you kind of come to, you look around you and you see yourself in this sort of dreamlike landscape where it's strange because you can tell, you know, that you're on the campus of the Adventuring Guild. You know it. But you can't place where exactly. It's like a composite of places or not a place at all. It's just a feeling you have that you know that you're there, like when you're in a dream and you know you're at school, but it's not your school, but you think it is. It's a very jarring feeling, and it's not helped by the fact that everything is covered with this cool gray mist, and it's late afternoon. The sun isn't quite going down yet, but the light is fading, and you're surrounded on all sides of this enormous clearing by these trees that are familiar and unfamiliar at the same time, because they're what you're used to seeing around this area, but again, you're not exactly sure where you are. And of course, there's this temple, which has started rising out of the ground, and so far it's sort of six pillars and a roof and a glass basin, and it's sort of this like stone that's immaculately kept, although you can tell it's just ancient. And in the bowl, in the basin, is Porla, who has been dropped there by sort of herself. The yellow light from her reliquary has kind of enveloped her and turned into a set of wings and flown her at lightning speed and dropped her in this basin. So here's what you see.
Gotta fight a bird in a bowl.
A bird bath.
Chicken soup fight.
It's a chicken soup light. Oh my god. Good soup.
The bowl, the giant bowl that she's in, is it a bread bowl full of chicken soup?
Yes. It's a bread bowl.
Are we in a Panera?
The final boss is just a Panera.
The on-campus, okay, Panera. Yep. That's where we are.
Oh my god.
I've been here before.
Okay, so here we go. You see Porla in this basin. You see sort of the outline of her form as these gigantic, sickly yellow light wings converge around her and wrap her up as though in a cocoon. And then you feel the entire world shake just for a second. It's like a tick, like a ticking clock, like almost just like an electric shock or like a zap, or like that moment when you stand up too quickly and everything just goes like, ooh. And when you open your eyes again, you notice two things. the first thing you notice is that you feel fantastic. You have just been hit with a massive super healing blast, for lack of a better... I mean, aww. You recognize Porla's magic anywhere.
Fuck it. Porla's good. Game over, guys. Let's go home.
And that's the end of it, is you just feel better and you go
home. Damn, Porla was right.
Wow, great campaign, guys.
We did it. I don't know what we did, but we did it.
I'm going to say, for the mechanics purposes, just pretend you just had a long rest.
Jesus!
Oh.
I do not trust it.
That's so
for
generous.
A second.
Okay.
I do not trust it for a second.
I'm going to take it.
This feels like original TV series ending of Evangelion. Everyone is clapping and saying
and then
congratulations.
Porla's real big and naked and just like pulling weird blobs out of the air.
Yeah.
Damn, I need to watch that.
So did that happen as she was dropped in? Was it like the interaction of her with the liquid in the basin? Or was it like, do we know what caused that surge?
It kind of looked to you as though when the light enveloped her, it then let out a massive pulse, like the rings of a planet that came out, and just, it was just one pulse, and all of a sudden you feel fantastic. Any wounds that you had all of a sudden are closed. And the second thing that you see once you come to and you open your eyes and they're very clear, you see the yellow light cocoon type thing that is surrounding Porla in this basin rise out of the basin. You see a massive clawed talon emerge, and then another. And eventually, it's hard to make out because it's made of this yellow light, but you see some sort of massive form. It's too large to be in this cramped little temple. And you see it crawl out, and once it's on a clearer patch of land, you see it rise slowly and stand, and you see it spread two massive, massive wings out to its full wingspan, which is somehow longer than its height, which is quite considerable. And you see it start to solidify. And suddenly it's not light anymore. It's a solid 3D form. And what you see is, well, Windswip, you recognize it as a dinosaur.
Oh no.
It is this massive, I keep saying massive, it's technically like huge in the D&D parlance, which is what? Several stories?
Big.
Big, just huge. Much just taller big. Than the temple. Much taller than the temple. So I would say at least like 200, 300 feet, kaiju size. And as it solidifies, you see, it reminds you a little bit of the weird swarm shape that the birds back at Teffin's place had been forming, except now it's very real, and this long beak is a very long, sharp, pointed beak that is made out of actual beak material. Why did I start that sentence when I don't know what beaks are made of? tooth? Chitin? I don't know. Cartilage of some kind. Made out of actual dinosaur. And you see this creature that is scaly and has feathers. And the main thing that you're taken in by is that it looks horrible. It looks bloody. Its feathers are falling off. It has gaping open wounds that are like prolapsing and looking disgusting and oozing. It has areas where you can almost see bone. It looks burnt. It looks like it's in pain. And that suspicion is confirmed to you when you see it rear its mighty head back and open its huge beak to the heavens and scream. And the scream you hear is familiar to you because it's Porla's scream. And you recognize it from the time that the statue came down. And you see in the chest of this gigantic Quetzalcoatlus, it's the dinosaur I'm thinking of, so giant, it's like a big, huge pterodactyl, basically. You see, it looks as though under this rotting, melting skin of this creature, you see the shape of Porla.
Fuck. So she's, oh, like, God. In so its it chest, and it's like...
Like a mech yeah. situation.
It's almost more like, you know when people get those body modifications that are like implants that are there to create shapes just under your skin?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's more like that.
Wow, that's horrifying.